Welcome back. McGoran Thomas here. It's Naturally Green on WYSL 1040, 92.1 FM. And a lush greenness outside after the rain last night. Things are really just vibrantly green. Lots of things in bloom. And once again, beware of just being in areas where lots of people wear a mask. And show your respect for other people who maybe don't have the leeway to risk getting sick. And as businesses open up more, certainly the risks go up a little bit. But they don't if people wear masks and the social distancing. We can avoid going backwards. But unfortunately, there's plenty of people who are not wearing them who think, I guess, that they're not vulnerable to this virus, and they think they're going to be fine. I hope they are. But it was, I think, figures from a couple days ago, there were something like 80 new cases of COVID-19 in Monroe County, maybe over several days. And I think a third of those, between a quarter and a third of those, were under 30 years old. So this is not something that only affects the elderly. Certainly in terms of the potential danger, the elderly need to take a lot of extra care, but there's still potential for strokes in younger people, for the strange effects on children. They started out with 5 or 6 in New York State, children who they didn't think it was the COVID virus, thought it was something else, and it appears to be some effect of the COVID virus that has very serious effects on children, even young, very young children, and now they're up to, they think, about 160 cases in New York State, and discovering that the same other states, other countries, they just weren't being recognized. So many reasons to be careful and be aware. The garden centers are busy, and if you want to go to a garden center that isn't as busy, generally, you know, go to those that are outside of Rochester. And these are some of my favorite nurseries. I call them destination nurseries. They're busy, but they're not as crazy busy as some of the other big nurseries. So I was at Sarah's Garden Center yesterday, and again, quite a few people, but not a crazy number. And I would imagine Palmiter's Garden Nursery in Avon is kind of similar. Also, Grandpa's Nursery in Sodus. The apple trees are just wrapping up bloom. And so whether you go east or west, you'll probably run into apple trees. It's a pretty time of year to drive through those areas. Again, the smaller nurseries are generally not going to be quite as busy. And if you really want to avoid as many people as possible, then go this week when it's raining, because a weekday in the rain is really the ideal time to go to a garden center. And there is some more rain in the forecast this week. Thunderstorms Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and you'll have many fewer people out. You may not want to be there during the thunderstorm or wandering around outside during the thunderstorm. But look at the forecast, check the radar, and I would bet that the garden centers won't be as busy this week. And it's really time to plant pretty much anything. I'm going to be planting some basil today. Tomatoes, all those things can go in now. The nighttime temperatures are generally going to be warm, although a long-range forecast for a week from today and Sunday and Monday, largely 60s, nighttime 48 here in Rochester. That's okay probably for the tomatoes, but we don't want that to go down much. But again, near 50 degrees, though it's cooler than now. And I love those. If it was 67 during the day and 48 at night, like they're predicting for next Saturday, that would be fantastic. Great weather to sleep at night and nice weather to work outside in 67. Today's going to be 71 and increasing sunshine as we go. One crucial thing to think about, because everyone's buying plants right now and putting them in the ground, try to avoid putting them in the ground in the morning, and do your weeding, do a lot of the your pruning and other work in the morning, but wait to transplant things, especially smaller things with smaller root systems, more delicate plants, annuals in general. Perennials and shrubs have a more robust root system, but they would also appreciate going in later in the day. So the difference is, you put them in the morning, say, right now, 9 a.m., you're up early, you're out in the garden at 8, you start putting in some plants in at 9, and you water them, but those plants are going to face some wind, some sun, for hours and hours and hours. They really don't get a chance to get new root systems started. And they're facing, can be some pretty tough conditions, depending on how soon it gets sunny out, how breezy it is. So waiting until, say, 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock to put them in the ground, they're going to be much happier. Overnight, they'll establish a bit of a root system. They won't face the sun and the wind immediately, and they're going to be happier. Certainly, people who plant in the morning, most of their plants survive. They do fairly well. But if you have the option, much better to plant later in the day. So take a break, take a siesta, enjoy your backyard, your patio, your window boxes, but do the planting later in the day. It does make a difference, and the roots grow pretty quickly, but they don't grow instantly. And the other key thing, which a lot of people forget, I would guess 3/4 of the people who buy plants at a nursery or garden center go home, take them out of the pot and put them right in the ground, and they don't break the root system. And I used to do a lot of gardening classes, and I would have a class on perennials in June, and tell people this, that you've got to break these, the outermost roots that are growing in circles. You don't need to break up the entire root system, just the ones that are growing in circles. And you would see people's faces drop, and they would sigh, and there'd be always a few people in the class that clearly put in a lot of plants and had not done this and were kind of bummed out, because the roots aren't going to know that they've been taken out of the pot. They're just going to keep growing in circles. And in some cases, you can take an annual, like a snapdragon or something, you take it out of the ground in the fall to clean up your garden. And by the way, you should leave snapdragons, because they sometimes overwinter. But you take that annual out of the ground in the fall, and you could put it back in the same pot it's surprisingly easy to get out of the ground because the roots haven't gone anywhere, and you could put it back in the same pot. And while that annual may have survived and bloomed for you, it needed a lot more water, a lot more care, and certainly didn't get as big as it would have if it had a normal root system. So if you've already planted some things, you seriously should consider popping them back out of the ground and breaking those outermost roots and putting it back in the ground. You can do that with your fingers with an annual, very, very delicate roots. And again, just breaking them a little bit. When I'm planting a lot of annuals, you know, a few flats of annuals, I actually just twist the root system in my fingers as I'm planting it, and the sort of the bottom of the root system, and that seems to work pretty well. And you don't need, when I started in horticulture, I worked at DeVisser's Nursery, which is now Clover Nursery on Landing Road, and planting some of my first shrubs and things for them with their crew, you know, I was being very delicate with the roots. And I'm sure they were laughing at me because I didn't want to hurt the root system, but I knew you had to separate it. I was kind of trying to disentangle them a little bit, and instead of breaking them. And in the end, you're much better off just cutting those outermost roots. So on the shrubs and perennials, those you probably can't do them with your fingers. The roots are just tougher, bigger plant. So I take a trowel or maybe my flat-bladed shovel, and I just go down the side of the root ball 3, 4, 5 times around the root ball, and then I'll cut the bottom off. Again, you've taken it out of the pot. The roots are all growing in circles usually. And I sort of shave the bottom half inch off the root ball. Again, getting most of the ones that are growing in circles. So I'm slicing those off on the very bottom, and then slicing down the sides. And what happens is, it's just like pruning. You're basically pruning the roots. When you prune something, that's generally where a lot of new growth starts. And that's what's going to happen with the roots. They're going to get a lot of new growth. It's going to grow out and go in search of its own water and nutrients and not be as dependent on you. It makes a world of difference. And especially a perennial or a shrub that's going to be in for a few years. The worst ones that people do this with are the rhododendrons and azaleas, where they don't break the roots. And that root ball acts like a wick. It just wicks the moisture away from the root ball. They tend to have a lot of peat moss. They like acid soil. The root balls in the pots tend to have a lot of peat moss. And if that is exposed after you plant it, that top of the root ball is exposed. It does wick that water away from the plant. So feather some mulch in around those, make sure they're deep enough without not being too deep, and cut those outermost roots. You could do it with a knife. I tend to do it with whatever I have handy. If there's some tough roots, I might do it with pruning shears. For a shrub, I'd probably use my flat-bladed spade, and again, just go down 3, 4, 5 times around the root ball. Depends how big the root ball is and how dense those roots are. So if you've already put in a lot of plants, hopefully you haven't put in hundreds of plants at this point, you should at least experiment with popping a few out of the ground and disturbing the roots and putting them back in and seeing how they fare compared to the ones you didn't take back out and break those roots. Do your own little science experiment. See if you can tell the difference. Maybe you can't. Maybe we'll have enough rain this summer. Maybe you fertilize a lot. Maybe there's a lot of Osmocote pellets in with whatever plant that you put in the ground. but especially in a drought, that's where this is going to make a world of difference, where you have roots that are actually growing somewhere rather than staying. You know, think about the size of a root ball of an annual. It's like an inch and a half deep and three quarters or an inch wide coming out of those little six packs. That is not a very big root system. So break up those roots. And don't, if you haven't been doing that, don't feel badly, because you're in the majority. I think most people don't do that. But they'd be more successful if they did. If you have questions, maybe wondering what something is, whether you actually planted that or whether it's a weed that you just don't recognize, send me a photo, michael@saverlife.com, and maybe help. It's always fun to try to identify plants. I ran into a couple strange plants this past week, and one was a combination of two vines that were growing up the side of a house. One was wisteria, which my neighbor's wisteria is blooming now, and it is gorgeous. Wisteria is so beautiful, and it gets bigger and even just crazy sizes down south, more like North Carolina and areas south of here. The wisteria is even bigger. But my neighbor's wisteria is really gorgeous right now. So this wisteria, the one I was looking at earlier this week, was in more of a shaded spot, wasn't blooming yet. But there were all these other vines in with it that were clearly an annual. It was hard to tell from dried up leaves what it was. I was thinking it was bindweed, but I don't think I'd ever seen bindweed this big. It was 8 feet tall and all intertwined with this wisteria. And it was mysterious. You know, could it have been a... And the people that whose house it was hadn't lived there for very many months, so they hadn't put it in the ground last year, so they had no idea what it was. You know, could it have been an annual vine, morning glories, maybe? Again, the leaves were so dried up, there's no way to tell. Could it have been an annual clematis? Maybe it was one of the swallowwort. This is an annual that. Or a perennial that that dies back to the ground and twines around things and sets off little seeds with parachutes, kind of like the milkweed. A terribly invasive plant. It's a perennial vine, but dies to the ground and just covers areas. A terrible plant to have. So I couldn't figure out what this was. If it had been the swallowwort, I should have seen some of the sort of the seed pods that were empty hanging on it, and then did some hunting around the ground underneath it and finally found a couple of brand new stems of bindweed. And there's some very happy bindweed growing like crazy, and it's growing right near the base of this wisteria. Even if bindweed was growing in the middle of a vegetable garden with fairly loose soil, you probably couldn't dig it out. Very deep roots, very breakable roots. Bindweed is it's actually in the morning glory family. It's got a white kind of morning glory like flower, but you're not going to get it out by digging it. So if you can catch it now, it's going to be pretty small. It's just starting to regrow. It's one of the very few times I would recommend using a product like Roundup, because you need something that's going to go down and kill the root system. You could conceivably pull it out persistently enough for years that it would eventually run out of energy to send up new growth. I'm afraid that would be quite a few years, and you'd be at it all summer long. Every time new growth started, you'd have to try and pull it out. Very hard to pull much out because these roots are breakable. So instead of spraying it with a product like Roundup, I would use a paintbrush and actually paint the leaves, maybe cut the stems and paint the cut stem. You're using, it will still come up. You're going to have to do this multiple times, but you do stand a chance of being able to control it. Bindweed is one of the worst weeds to see in a garden. It's a bit disheartening to see it this healthy. And again, it's going to be a struggle. You've got the wisteria right there, which means you can't dig this out. You'd have to dig out the entire wisteria, which was a big vine. It had been in a while. So if you want some help identifying things, send me some photos, michael@saverlife.com. They also had a buckthorn, which is a native, pretty sure it's a native tree. It's got kind of a cherry-like bark. Bark's kind of pretty. The leaves are nondescript, and it does get some black berries that the birds apparently eat, because that's how they distribute the seeds around. I have one growing in my yard, a little tiny one that's going to be taken out, and I'll get rid of it. There's a reason it's called buckthorn, and that's because it has thorns, but they're deceiving thorns. They're not like hawthorns, which are a couple inches long and just woody, deadly thorns. You could sew leather with them. They are extraordinary thorns on hawthorns. But buckthorn, they're kind of short thorns on the end of stems. And it's sort of like the lance on the end of a rifle or something. They're not as obvious when you're working around a buckthorn. And then you just get stuck really badly. It can do some damage. So buckthorn is one I would get rid of. There's so many other plants that would look great. In this case, get rid of the buckthorn, put in a shad tree or serviceberry, it's also called. The berries will be developing over the next couple of weeks. It's already bloomed. It's also called Juneberry, so you can imagine when those berries are ripe in a couple of weeks, and they are like blueberries, really good. Great fall color on it, so I would take this buckthorn out and put a serviceberry in as soon as possible. And the sort of the dilemma that you have is, where this was a small yard, where do you plant another tree? The buckthorn was actually in a decent location, but ideally you would put in a small tree somewhere else, give it a few years to grow before taking the buckthorn down, just so that it didn't look as kind of naked and exposed. In this case, the buckthorn provided some shade, and it was between two garages in the backyard, so it was kind of broke up the yard. It looked nice. It was a good spot. It was just the wrong tree. And so if you wait to take it out, you wait a couple years, you figure, just don't get around to it. Those are years that are lost of the new growth of the tree. So if you decide to take a tree out, don't wait a few years to actually do it, because you're losing time in getting a new tree started, and something valuable in the long run to replace it that you'll love. This shad tree will bloom, pretty white flowers, one of the first trees to bloom. The berries are tasty. The fall color is nice. The bark is kind of gray. They're pretty tough trees, a native tree. They generally grow in the woods under other trees, an understory tree, and they're kind of sparse in the way they grow. In the yard, there'll probably be a denser tree, which means more flowers and more berries. Redbud would be another one. It's a native tree. They're full bloom right now. I'm looking at one in my backyard. My neighbor has one. And actually, ours is a baby of the neighbor's. It seeded itself in our yard, and we let it grow there. And actually, Melrose Street here in the 19th Ward, around the corner from where we live, quite a few people planted redbuds, and probably a few of them allowed seedlings to grow. So there's a fair number of redbuds on Melrose Street, which is not a long street. It's maybe four blocks long, but some pretty houses. And again, the redbuds right now are in bloom. They're in bloom in Genesee Valley Park. And they also are an understory tree, so they're not as showy, not as many flowers. They are growing in the shade of some of the big oak trees along the canal in Genesee Valley Park. But in the yard, the redbud can be very showy right now. It has a heart-shaped leaf and is a little bit prone to splitting. If I had to choose between the two, I would choose a shad tree or service berry, partly because of the berries, and also just a longer-lived tree than the redbud in general. So, I've got a few redbud seedlings each year that I give away, and the shads also. You end up with little seedlings of those. So sometimes you can find those and maybe give them to family or friends or neighbors. You just have to figure out how to identify them early on. So again, if you had trouble identifying whether it's a seedling, a weed, a shrub, any of these other things, email me, michael@saverlife.com. Send a couple of photos just so that I have a couple of shots at seeing the size of the plant and, the way it's growing. If you think you see poison ivy, also send me a photo, because that is growing and is showing up ever more places, it seems, each year. The phone number here, 585-346-3000. We'll take a quick break. Be back afterwards from our sponsors on WYSL 1040. I'm going to tell you again now, if you're still listening there, if you're driving into town with the dark cloud above you, dialing the number who's bound to love you. Call me at the station. The lights are all big. Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here, the sponsors of Naturally Green. Those include Sarah's Garden Center, which is in Brockport. They are my original sponsor back in 1994. They said they would sponsor my shows until I got, my show. I just had a gardening show at that point. They would sponsor the gardening show until I got other sponsors. They paid the full fare, which was, when I started, it was pretty expensive. At that point, to buy an hour, and I'm eternally grateful to Sarah's Garden Center. Stephen and Kathy Kepler have a great operation there. The gardens in back look amazing, and they have someone who edges their gardens for them. It must have been trained in England or something. These edges are crazy along the grass. It's like something you would see at a botanical garden, and it's pretty simple, but it looks so professional. I've never seen it in anyone's home garden. So beautiful time to see their gardens, and of course, tons and tons of plants to choose from. They get a lot of unusual annuals and perennials and things. Sarah's Garden Center, 389 East Avenue in Brockport, and again, one of those destination nurseries. They certainly will be busy today. There's more parking around the back, but it's also a fairly large nursery, a lot of space to walk around in, and lots of plants to choose from, including tons of perennials. It's sarahsgardencenter.com and open 7 days a week in Brockport. Also brought to you by the Birdhouse and Gallia's Tropical Greenhouse and Florist. They are right near each other in Pittsburgh. The Birdhouse on Monroe Avenue, right near Clover, and Gallia's Clover and Jefferson Road. Well, the Birdhouse is doing more videos. Facebook, check those out. They often have them from Saturday mornings and their Tuesday tea and tweets, which they, of course, used to do at the store, but right now is available online. So you can learn about attracting some of the migrating birds, about birdhouses, about squirrels, etc. Lots to check out. It's thebirdhouseny.com, and follow them on Facebook to see their videos. And Gallia's Tropical Greenhouse and Florist has beautiful flowers. They can deliver things for you also, if that helps. Maybe picking up mulch, etc. They also carry the big green eggs. And if you haven't seen these before, they are a great way to grill, smoke, pretty much do anything cooking outside. You can do pizzas on these. You can do cornbread in the pan. I mean, they are amazingly versatile, and they look exactly like they sound, a big green egg. It's Gallia's Tropical Greenhouse and Florist, corner of Jefferson and Clover. And finally, Bergen Water Gardens. I was out there yesterday visiting Larry Now and Lily. It is just beginning to start growing, the lotus. There's a bud on one in the greenhouse. It's been cool weather, so the lotus are waiting for warmer weather. But it's a good time to buy them and bring them home and have some lotus to bloom in your garden. But also, they can be on a patio or something in a container that holds water. They have some beautiful pots and things there that can be used for lotus. And lots of carnivorous plants. So if you are interested or have kids or grandchildren or friends or neighbors who might be interested in carnivorous plants, they have lots of them. Really an astounding selection of them at Bergen Water Gardens. BergenWaterGardens.com. They open 10 a.m. each day. They're between Churchville and Bergen on Buffalo Road. And again, they're shipping lotus tubers around the country and around the world. It's BergenWaterGardens.com. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Naturally Green. You would not believe your eyes if 10 million fireflies lit up the world as I fell asleep. Just stand and stare. I'd like to make myself believe that planet Earth turns slowly. It's hard to see. Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It is Naturally Green on WISL 1040 92.1 FM. And was reading this week about cicadas. One of those just iconic sounds of summer, the cicadas singing during the day. And cicadas are really kind of fascinating things. I found in the garden yesterday two of the cases. When they turn into adult cicadas, the beetles, essentially, will climb up sometimes on a tree and leave their their shell behind. In this case, I found them on the ground. But it just looks like a giant beetle shell that's kind of cut in half, and the adult climbed out of it and had wings. And these, they're maybe an inch long. These shells that are left over. And again, sometimes you'll see them on a tree or on the ground. So I saw two of them yesterday, and then ran into this article right afterward about the 17-year cicadas that are going to emerge this year. This is really bizarre in a lot of ways. There are 13-year and 17-year cicadas, and the article that I read said that the scientists kind of guess that these periodical cicadas are trying to avoid predators, you know, and predators probably aren't on 17-year cycles, and so if these periodical cicadas came up every year, emerged every year, the predators would be looking for them and maybe in greater numbers. But these only show up every 13 or 17 years. So there are cicadas that are not periodical, and that's why we have cicadas every year. But there are some of these big groups of cicadas that appear periodically. And so this one, luckily, is not in our area. And I say that because it says as many as 1.5 million cicadas per acre will emerge. And that's a lot of cicadas. That starts to feel like the locusts that are, you know, billions of them flying through Africa as we speak. You know, an acre is 43,000 square feet. And, you know, I think my house here in the city of Rochester is on a tenth of an acre. And so, you know, you put together 10 of the houses and their yards and you get an acre, and there's going to be 1.5 million cicadas coming out of the ground in that space. That's time to leave town. That's crazy. So not here. Let me repeat. This is not happening here. They are looking at it for Southwest Virginia, parts of North Carolina, and West Virginia. Virginia Tech actually put out a news release about this. So they don't hurt you. They don't bite you. They don't want to have anything to do with humans. But they make a lot of noise. And, you know, in the summer, the regular cicadas that are out, there might be 10 of them in the few houses around me, and they're up in the trees usually. Yeah, maybe 10, 15, you know, over a decent part of an acre. I cannot imagine 1.5 million. That's really crazy. And again, every 17 years. So they'll emerge this year, and they'll probably damage some crops and things as they're laying eggs. The release said that they can be a danger to orchids, vines, and some trees. But I just can't get my mind around 1.5 million per acre over many acres. Again, we're talking parts of several states. It's almost worth driving down just to hear what that sounds like. I mean, I think instead I'll try to find some recordings online once they emerge. But there are some periodical cicadas, at least up through Pennsylvania. I remember seeing reports previous years about some other emergences like this. 1.5 million per acre. Just, can't fathom that. So that's coming this summer. Luckily, quite a bit further south from us. Again, they're not going to bother. People, but could damage some crops. And they live in the ground for those 17 years. I've found cicada larvae in the ground. Maybe you've seen white grubs in your lawn, little C-shaped. Maybe when you're planting annuals and perennials, you might run into these even right now. They're tiny. They're maybe curled up, the size of a large bean or something, white with a kind of a black head, and the cicadas look just the same, except they're like 20 times bigger. They're more like your pinky in size as a grub in the ground. So these 17-year ones live in the ground for 17 years and then emerge. But I have to say, I do love cicadas. I just don't want 1.5 million per acre. That's what's coming to, again, parts of Virginia, North Carolina, West Virginia. If you have family or friends there, you should ask them about these cicadas. I'm sure people are talking about them. And the sort of understatement, I'm afraid, the Cooperative Extension from Virginia says communities and farms with large numbers of cicadas emerging at once may have a substantial noise issue. 1.5 million per acre. I can't imagine the noise. We were sitting outside last night, and we have some toads that sing in our pond, and it was just one toad who was singing, and it was quite loud, actually. Just this one toad, and one cicada can be pretty loud up in a tree, if you remember, maybe from last summer. It does not take many to be loud. And other sort of apocryphal wildlife stories, the murder hornet has shown up in the state of Washington. This is a hornet from Japan, I think, in particular. They actually eat them there sometimes. And there are many communities around the world that eat insects. The United States just generally doesn't happen to be one of them. But not uncommon around the world to eat insects, and these murder hornets, I guess. People do eat them in other countries. So this is a very large hornet, which is, I guess, maybe 2 inches long. Just sounds really crazy. And the big problem is not so much the sting for people, which... If a number of them sting you at once, it can kill people. So they are dangerous. But the real danger are the honeybee hives. And these murder hornets go in and just decimate the hive in hours, I guess. And there are tens of thousands of bees, honeybees, in a hive. And these murder hornets just go in and kill them, and then they eat the young, the larvae and the honey, and then move on to the next honeybee hive. So they're very worried in Washington about controlling these and eliminating these so-called murder hornets, which you can look up online to see the photos. I'm not sure the photos do justice to something that large compared to seeing it yourself. It's the kind of thing it wouldn't do me any good, but I'd run as fast as I could in the other direction. So my impression is that they don't go out in search of stinging humans. They really don't want humans. They just want the larvae and the honey from honeybee hives. But it's, you know, humans that get in the way of that they might sting. And so right now it's just in Washington. But, you know, these are, they obviously have wings, can fly, and they are encouraging people to report them when they're seen, and they're going to try to control them. With many of these invasive species, the elimination doesn't happen, and they eventually work their way around the country, at least around regions. And so I wouldn't be surprised if these hornets show up at some point. It'll take them a while to work their way here from Washington, unless someone transports them here, either because they look cool. That's hard to imagine someone would actually try to catch one or two and transport them. But people do crazy things. But, you know, gradually, state by state, they could potentially move this way. And it's really a bigger problem for California in many ways, with all the crops that need to be pollinated by the honeybees, that they bring in something like 70% to 80% of the honeybee colonies in the United States go to California for the almond bloom. And so these murder hornets would just be devastating. And so they're working hard to try to eradicate these. But, you know, they certainly did give them a name that captures your attention. So they're not here. They're just on the West Coast and just, I think, just in Washington. But something to be aware of and kind of, I guess, appreciate Mother Nature. And I find insects and amphibians and the, you know, the toads and the frogs, it's a fascinating world that a lot of people just are not connected to it all. They don't really see what's happening in their yards. Don't notice the bees that are on the flowers. They only notice them when things like yellow jackets sting you. Then people notice, and so then all the bees and hornets get bad names, you know, a bad reputation because of those yellow jackets. So it's partly just respecting Mother Nature, learning more about these, their life cycles, like these cicadas. They're really kind of a fascinating story. If you have comments, questions, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. You can reach us here, 585-346-3000. We'll take a quick break. Be back afterwards from our sponsors on WYSL 1040.
One night, Farmer Brown was taking the air. I locked up the barn with the greatest of care. Into the hen house, something stirred. And he hollered, "Who's there?" This is what he heard. There ain't nobody here but a chicken. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself. Stop all that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. Hang on, they point that gun the other way. And I'm till the break of day. Cause there ain't nobody here but a chicken. Sure ain't knowing it all. Are you stopping there running and taking the ground? And you're kicking up an awful dust. We think it's time to sleep, man.
Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here, the sponsors of Naturally Green. Those include Palmiter's Garden Nursery. And Palmiter's is between Avon and Geneseo, Route 39. Beautiful drive this time of the year. A nursery that will, you know, they'll be busy today, tomorrow, but they're not going to be crazy busy. It's just gorgeous gardens. They're open 10 to 6 Monday through Saturday, noon to 6 on Sundays. And they specialize in perennials, but they have some trees, small trees, and the size tree that you could put in your car and bring home with you, and some vines and some shrubs, but lots of perennials, some really cool annuals. They are famous for their peppers, hot and sweet peppers. They grow often 100 to 130 different varieties of peppers alone, which is a lot of different peppers. They sell the crop in the fall at the public market, but in the spring they sell the plants because they grow extras, and sometimes have mixed packs, so you can choose a pack that's got six different peppers in it instead of six of one pepper. So ask them about those. Palmeter's Garden Nursery. They are about half an hour south of Rochester, very close to our radio station, and so, again, one of those destination nurseries. Also brought to you by, and by the way, their website's palmetersgardennursery.com. Also brought to you by Wisteria Flowers and Gifts for some really gorgeous flowers to brighten someone's day. Get in touch with Wisteria. They can deliver. That's at wisteriaflowersandgifts.com. And they also do silk flowers. So if you want to do something a bit different, something that doesn't need to be changed out, the water doesn't need to be changed, where they look incredibly real. The quality of these silk flowers is amazing. So check out wisteriaflowersandgifts.com, Culver Road, right near University. Also brought to you by Bricolo Group, BricoloTreeAndLawn.com, and their nursery and garden center, which is on 441, just east of Turco Road and Route 250. It's one of the key places that emphasizes native plants. They have others, but they do have a really nice selection of native plants, and they've been doing some online classes. Link to those, BricoloTreeAndLawn.com. They can deliver mulch for you, and bulk mulch is easy to work with. Get a few cubic yards of it. If you have a large property, you can get maybe 6 cubic yards and use that over the course of the next week maybe to make your gardens look beautiful, to create some new gardens. It's BricoloTreeAndLawn.com. If you want some help with designing gardens, maybe an area for a vegetable garden, perhaps a patio or water feature, maybe a sort of an outdoor cooking grill area, maybe a flagstone walkway, get in touch with them, and again, they can design and install that for you. BricoloTreeAndLawn.com. The Arbor Barber, Steve and Emily Leidy, can help give you more sun in your yard, get rid of some of those weed trees that grow incredibly fast, and perhaps there's some damage up in the trees that you need to have taken out. Maybe you're just not sure whether the tree's valuable enough to keep or too damaged to keep. Get a free quote from them. It's the Arbor Barber, 289-4117. They are work all over Monroe County, done work for neighbors and relatives here, and lots of listeners for a couple of decades. It's Arbor Barber, 289-4117. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Naturally Green. Thomas here. It's Naturally Green on WISL 1040, 92.1 FM, and I was out at Bergen Water Gardens yesterday, and there was a stack of boxes next to their, they have a relatively new storage building, and I thought those were lotus tubers that were going out to customers being shipped, and it turns out it's a shipment of carnivorous plants that's come in from Sri Lanka. And Larry was telling me that they've been trying to get this shipment in for a month or two. You know, areas around the world are shut down, and they couldn't get these carnivorous plants on a flight here to the United States, and they just arrived. So it's going to be exciting to open those. I think Larry said it's the largest shipment of carnivorous plants he's ever ordered, and they already have a lot of them, so can't wait to see what's in these boxes. He was out mowing the grass, and I'm sure he would have much rather been opening those boxes to see what had just arrived from Sri Lanka. He also said that when I interviewed him a few weeks ago, a couple months ago, I guess, that he has an order ready to go to Singapore. There's a new botanical garden there that ordered like 400 tubers of lotus, and he can't get that into Singapore right now because the botanical garden is shut down, so there's no one to receive the order, and he's facing, at some point here, he's going to have to put those tubers in pots, and it's 400 more pots, not an insignificant number. So hopefully that shipment will be able to go through to Singapore. But again, it's crazy that this place in Bergen, you know, here anything but tropical and warm, is growing this many lotus and shipping them around the world. So it was fun to see. He's got lots of demonstration gardens that will be starting to grow soon. Lotus really need any warmer temperatures. These cold, frigid April and cold May were not helpful for getting the lotus to grow, but they will. And I've got one I'm put out in our pond, so they're just starting to grow. So Bergen Water Gardens is open now, basically 10 to 5, and Larry was hoping things didn't get too busy this weekend. I don't think they will. They'll get busier as the lotus bloom that are in his demonstration gardens out by the road, and he put in something like 30 or 40 more of these rectangular gardens, sort of sunken water gardens. They're squares, and they're about maybe 6 or 8 feet wide, something like that. But there's going to be a lot of lotus blooming this summer at Bergen Water Gardens. So again, there's not a lot in bloom. He's getting some new tropical water lilies in from Thailand, but there were a couple water lilies blooming inside the greenhouse. There was a bud on a lotus that was in one of the greenhouses, and these carnivorous plants were all ready to catch insects. They were pretty cool. So just one of the unique places around our area that you wouldn't know about unless you listen here or get the Upstate Gardener's Journal or these specialty type forums for places like Bergen Water Gardens. So if you run into a cool place like this, let me know. Email me, michael@saverlife.com. You can also call us here, 585-346-3000. In the next hour, we'll talk about food, restaurants, what's happening here in our area, some expansions. Some restaurants are opening new locations, even though COVID-19 is still keeping things somewhat shut down. For all the small businesses out there and the big businesses, wear a mask, because if we don't, we're going to end up going backwards, and the virus is still here. It's still going to be transmitted, and there will be people headed to the hospital. There'll be people who die from the COVID-19, and businesses will have to shut down once again, which will be That will be devastating if, again, we let the numbers get out of control. So they're under control now because people have stayed home and have worn masks. If you go out to nurseries, if you go out to get takeout, if you, you know, go out to talk to neighbors and friends, just wear a mask for now. Though they're working on a vaccine, that'll happen at some point here. But for now, in order to return to somewhat more normal business, people need to wear masks. That's the bottom line. We'll be back in the next hour with Ford Love of Food. Discover the Finger Lakes to follow here on WYSL 1040.